Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Good evening, White Sox fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Future Sots Hot Takes and Heaters. Today is Wednesday, July, is it the 15th or the 16th? Man, I don't even know the days are. It's the 16th, right? Yeah. So Wednesday, July 16th, we are right in the smack of the break after the All-Star game. My name is Danny Miller. The gentleman sitting next to me on my screen and giving us the beautiful pipes that he has over the airwaves is Jacob Thom. How you doing this evening, Jacob?
Hanging in there. It's too hot again, but other than that, we're all good.
Right on. So, we talked a little bit last week, and we had an MLB draft over the weekend and into Monday and Tuesday. The White Sox did some things that, we kind of predicted. I think the whole world saw it coming, especially after some of Merkin's reports of what Getz and Shirley had to say in the days leading up to the draft. Then after that, we had an MLB All-Star weekend, or I should say All-Star week lineup with, home run derbies and the game and an interesting finish to the game yesterday. So we have a few things to talk about, as well as the MLB trade deadline is inching closer and closer as we speak. Things are already kind of slightly moving a little bit in the world of MLB. I expect them to ramp up here shortly. And I think we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that tonight because we think that there's a chance that some of these trades happen between tonight and the next time we talk next Wednesday. So why don't we just start with, the things that have happened back in the rear view a little bit. We can talk about, the draft and All-Star weekend. But since the All-Star game happened yesterday, I wanted to ask you, what did you think of the game and how that homer off ended up breaking the tie at the end of the game last night?
So full-fledged. Had the game on, fell asleep at 8:30. Didn't see the entire back half of it. Got way too much sleep last night. Heard about it this morning. I think it was a great idea. I think I was going to bring this up later, but I think it should be a regular season thing. White Sox suck at it, but after the 10th inning, nobody cares. It's a regular season. Let's go to a swing off. Kind of like a shootout in hockey. I'm here for it. It was kind of weird though, because half the players had already left. So you were stuck with three AL hitters where if everybody was there, I think it'd be more interesting. You would have had Shohei, Alonso, and whoever else. And then against Judge, Cal, but with half the guys not there, it was kind of interesting. But I think it was a good idea. I think the actual All-Star game was really entertaining from the moments that I watched of it in the first half. Shane Smith did his job, attempted to injure some trade deadline acquisitions, and yeah.
Yeah, you know, I watched the whole game, and my wife actually sat through it with me, which is weird because she'll watch White Sox games with me here and there, but, you know, to see her sit through an All-Star game was kind of interesting. But, you know, of course I had some comments throughout the game and, you know, flipping through social media while I was doing that. And I'm seeing all the, you know, the where's Shane Smith? Why isn't he pitching? And the funny thing was, is I leaned into my wife and I was like, because he's going to get traded soon. And he's going to get traded to one of the coaches that, are, you know, are there at the game. And that's why they don't want to pitch him. But it turns out that he made it in the bottom of the eighth. And, you know, he didn't look great, you know. He did what Shane Smith's been doing the last couple of starts. And he's letting his fastball get away from him a little bit. And I don't know, man. You know, the first thing I said when I saw him hit the guy was that, I mean, that is like the worst possible thing that we could have seen from our only All-Star representative. Was like, he goes out there, he throws a handful of pitches, and in his second or third pitch, he hits a batter and possibly breaks his hand for a guy who's, you know, in an All-Star game and is now going to miss like a month because he's got a couple of broken fingers on the bottom of my hand. So, excuse me. All in all, definitely a little bit of I don't know, mixed emotions to see. You know, I was happy to see him get in the game, but not happy to see the outcome of his pitch thrown. But, man, I got to talk about that homer off, the swing off at the end of the game. And I don't know that I share your thoughts on that at all, because, yeah, it was different. It was cool. I think it's fine for an All-Star game because, you know, back when the All-Star games counted, everybody was like, this is stupid. Now they don't count. Let's put on a show. And that's what the All-Star game is about putting on a show and having fun. And I thought that was fun. You know, there was a little bit of suspense when Schwarber went up there and hit three back-to-back-to-back on all three pitches that he had an opportunity on to take the lead for the National League. But, yeah, when you get Aranda to come up there, and the guy's got like 11 dingers on the season. He's not necessarily your prototypical home run derby type guy. And it was because, you know, we didn't find out right away, but it was because there was nobody on the bench. You know, guys were already gone. They'd already left and headed to the clubhouse and were like changing. They were getting back on flights or hanging out with their family and trying to enjoy the little bit of off time that they had. So, yeah, all in all, I think it was okay. I think it was fun, but I think it could have been different. Now, as far as like regular season games go, I definitely don't want to see that in the regular season. And to be quite honest with you, I wish they'd just go back to, you know, regular season. Let's just go back to the old school rules. I hate the ghost runner. You know, I get it. They don't want games to go on forever. But, like, how often does that happen where games go 14, 15, 16 innings, you know, or more?
It's been a while.
Yeah, I remember, you know, the White Sox going, like, 22 innings once. I think I want to say it was like 07 or 08 or somewhere in there. You know, those games they're kind of weird, but it doesn't happen all the time. And I'd really rather not take away from, I feel like it just takes away from the game of baseball, putting a ghost runner out there. Let's play some real baseball. Let's see how managers manage their bullpen. You know, we're taking pressure off of those guys that actually have to do their job correctly. And I feel like it gives an unfair advantage to the away team. It takes home field advantage away from the home field team because the away team gets the first opportunity to put a run across the plate. And when they do, that pressure is now on the home team. Home field advantage completely gone. So that's my two cents on that. I just figured, you know, we'd talk about it a little bit. But any other thoughts on the All-Star games and any of that other stuff?
I do, but I'll save it for my hot take.
Oh, interesting. Little teaser on the hot take for later in the show tonight. All right. So where do you want to go to next? You want to talk a little bit about the draft?
Yeah, I think we should. I think that was the big ticket item of the weekend. And
It definitely was. So, obviously, if you haven't been living under a rock, you know that the White Sox were unfortunate in their lottery drawing a couple years ago, and ended up drawing, you know, what was it, fifth or sixth last year, when they had an opportunity to be one, and were not able to participate in the lottery this year, which means that with the worst record in baseball history, they were only eligible to pick no higher than 10th, which they did. So with the 10th pick, the White Sox went and scooped up prep shortstop Billy Carlson. And immediately, I was on stream live with, I wasn't on stream, but I was in the chat live with Ian and James when it happened. And there was quite a bit of talk. And most of the folks in that chat were pretty ecstatic about it. But again, following along on social media as that was happening, it just seemed like White Sox Twitter just kind of crapped themselves a little bit. They were all, you know, immediately heard defense first shortstop and immediately thought this guy's nobody. There were people saying he was Jacob Gonzalez 2.0, Jacob Amaya 2.0. They're like, whoa, 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 wait a minute, pump the brakes. So your thoughts on Billy Carlson as the 10th overall pick and first round draft pick of the White Sox in 2025.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said this last week, I think, but I'm like, you know, I think it was a blessing that the Sox ended up picking 10th this year, because they'll have the opportunity to pick first next year, especially with the Rockies. They'll be moved down to 10, and I think next year's a way better draft class. And honestly, like, I don't even think this is a crazy, like, homer take, but, like, I think Billy Carlson's a better prospect than Willits, who went number one to Washington. Like, I was higher on Carlson, and I'm not a prospect guy. I'm not a scout, but, like, Billy Carlson was the number one prep shortstop going into the year. Obviously, Willits has the age advantage over him. Carlson's going to be 19 here, but, you know, I don't think it's a Jacob Gonzalez. The only thing that was similar between those guys is, like, they both play shortstop, and Gonzalez doesn't even play shortstop anymore. So, you know, this is a legit hit tool, or sorry, a legit defensive guy. You know, I saw the comparisons, and I, you know, some people are calling him Bobby Witt Light. I don't think he's the athlete that Bobby Witt is, but, like, I think your short term comparisons, like a Mason Wynn, and, like, I think you start getting like Dansby Swanson type vibes of, like, there's legit power here. If you fix the swing, I think Ryan Fuller, you know, that's going to be obviously his job. I think you have the potential for a 2025 home run guy. And then you add in what should be gold glove defense. I mean, he seems like the type of guy who has a four war floor. Like, Andrelton Simmons kind of seems like his absolute floor. And you can do a lot worse than that in this draft. He's a insane defensive prospect, but it's not just defense with him. There's a lot of offensive upside. And that's what you're getting with a prep guy. And I'm really excited to see what Ryan Fuller does with it.
Yeah, here's the thing. The reason that he was called a defense-first player is probably because he was the best defensive player, not just at shortstop, but probably anywhere in this draft. You know, it's difficult to say 100% for sure on that, but I don't think that there was another guy who was as polished with the glove. He moves like a baseball player. He moves like a seasoned veteran at going on 19 years old, not even 19 years old. And then he's got an arm that is unbelievable. You know, a two-way player in high school, pitcher who's, you know, in the 90s already. Obviously, I don't think most folks are feeling like he's going to pitch at all in his professional career. You know, outside of maybe the opportunity when, you know, it's a blowout game and you don't want to waste your bullpen. Maybe you throw him in there to, you know, see what he can do. But, excuse me. The main thing is he's right now at least above average in 4 out of 5 tools. And his hit tool is not bad either. He's got a little bit of a long swing. That's the one knock I'll say on him offensively. It's just, I mean, ever so slightly long. He loads up a little bit, which slows the swing down, but he's got great contact. So, you know, the big thing is he's not facing pitching that's more than about 91, 92 miles an hour max. So I think that's one of the bigger knocks on him is like, yeah, okay, he can hit the ball. He can hit the ball, you know, in the gaps. He's a line drive hitter. Doesn't hit with a lot of loft. A lot of people are saying he's a 10 to 12 home run guy right now. But again, he's only 18 going on 19 years old. When they do their physicals, somebody was actually telling me, and I don't know how true this is, but teams are looking at like growth plates now. Have you heard this?
No.
Like, I don't even know. Like, it sounded pretty ridiculous to me, but like, somebody was trying to tell me, yeah, like they checked his growth plate and he's supposed to have a spurt somewhere. And I'm like, you know, I don't know how much I buy into that, but at 18, 19 years old, it's pretty much given he's going to grow some anyway. He's at least going to put on some weight, some muscle. You know, obviously he's going to get into, you know, a workout routine with a pro ball club that's going to get him eating right, moving right, and doing all the things he needs to do. And if he's at a 10 or 12 home run power potential now, there's no way that doesn't grow. The only thought is you hope that you don't have to sell out the contact and his barrel rate for power. And I'll just leave it at that. But he is definitely not an offensive liability. The guy can swing it. He's just not a big power threat as of right now. So I like some of your comparisons. Dansby Swanson, I thought, was a really good one because Dansby Swanson's a wizard with the glove. And Dansby Swanson can, you know, find ways to get on base. The other thing I like about Billy Carlson is he seems to have discipline at the plate. He's not a guy who's going to chase a bunch of garbage outside of the zone. He'll force pitchers to make hitters' pitches, which is something the White Sox, I think, are trying to focus on more now than they ever have. So always good to hear there. Anything else you want to add on Billy Carlson before we move on?
No, I think that's all I had.
All right, cool. Well, and then I guess we'll move on to the second round, number 44 overall pick for the Chicago White Sox, Fauske, who is a local boy. Surprise, surprise. We kind of all seen this one coming. If you've been following White Sox drafts at all the last few years, Mike Shirley and his scouts have a penchant for picking the area codes guy in the second round. It's just, it's been happening over and over and over again. So, you know, Fauske playing for, what was the high school he's playing for? It's right out.
I was hoping you had it cause it had blanked.
It's right. It's not far from me here in, what is that? LaGrange Park, Nazareth. Yeah.
I think it's just Nazareth.
Is it Nazareth? Willowbrook Nazareth or whatever it is. Yeah, something like that. Anywho, same team that, believe it or not, Jim Thome's kid plays on. So he knows Jim Thome's
kid. Jim Thome's a coach, I think.
And Jim Thome is, coach.
Yeah.
Jim Thome is also a coach, which was my next thing. So
my bad.
Go ahead. No, Uncle it's Jim. Quite all right. So what's your thoughts on the number or the second round pick?
I mean, listen, this was kind of a, you know, if he falls to you at 44, you take him. Obviously, as you mentioned, they had to have had a lot of conversation with him, especially with him being in their backyard. But it wasn't like he was just picked because, you know, he was extremely close to the White Sox. He's a true superstar athlete, you know, two-star guy, 6'2", 205. I think he's got a lot of power. I saw a lot of people freak out when they were like, oh my God, we drafted a catcher. That's the last thing we need. I think he's definitely going to be a corner guy, but yeah, I mean, yeah,
I don't think the catchers, I don't think that sticks at all.
No, not at all. I don't even think he's played catcher since like his sophomore year. So, he just absolutely rakes. He's a really impressive athlete. I think he's probably got the most power in of the class other than they're like, seventh round pick DiPietro or something. I'm kind of interested, but he's an impressive guy. Seems to be well liked by everybody that's talked about him. So another really, really high upside prep guy for White Sox to develop.
Yeah, I you know what? Again, there was some mixed emotions on this one as well too, but I think that the familiarity they have with, and I think that's the reason they go early after the area code guys, is because they have that familiarity. It's easy for them to get out and scout these guys. Not to mention when you've got Jim Thome out there coaching, who's also currently a team ambassador for the White Sox, spend some time with the front office guys. He's in the building. If anybody knows and anybody sees, it's Jim Thome. You know, obviously he's coaching this guy. He spent a lot of time with the kid. And if he's not ready, if he doesn't have the caliber and the makeup of a guy who can potentially break an MLB lineup at some point, Jim Tomey's going to let you know. Right. This is not somebody who, people will say, well, Jim Thome played for the White Sox, but he was enshrined in the Hall of Fame and is an Indian uniform and blah, blah, blah. Jim Tomey's been working for the White Sox since he's left the field. So let's just keep that straight. He's got a great relationship with the front office, and I believe wholeheartedly that is a solid, solid pick for the White Sox.
Yeah, I know a lot of future Sox people were really, Dylan loved the pick. Everybody on the stream loved the pick. So, I leave it to them when it comes down to, like I said, I'm not a prospect guy, but, as much as they like the pick. Also, he was thought to go higher. I mean, and I wouldn't be surprised. I know they said this on the stream. There goes my microphone. They wouldn't be surprised if the White Sox floated him down to 44, which wouldn't shock me either. So, yeah, a great pick. I was really excited about their top two picks.
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest with you, the top three, in my opinion, probably couldn't gone any better than they did. The only thing that I would say is, and don't get me wrong, again, I'm really happy about Billy Carlson. I was pretty clear that, last week when we did our show that I was really hoping JoJo Parker would fall. It didn't happen. Two picks before the White Sox, he was scooped. And unfortunately, that didn't work out. I think JoJo's hit tool is, in my opinion, was the top of the class as far as prep shortstops goes. You mentioned the Willits thing surprised you. I was not surprised by that, only because he had been flying up draft boards the last month and a half. And there were a couple of places out there that actually had him going number one overall. So I don't know. But I was not a Willits guy, as you were not a Willits guy, but I was a JoJo Parker guy.
My
1A and 1B were JoJo Parker, and then B was actually I'm going to say now 1-1. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. My Wi-Fi spazzed out for a second.
Oh.
No, I was going to say you weren't surprised by 1. Were you surprised by 2?
Yes. 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 I'm shocked that Ethan Holiday didn't go in the top two, to be honest with you, or Cade didn't go either. I thought Cade would be, if Willits is one, I thought Cade was going to be two. If it was going to be a position player, I figured it was going to be Ethan Holiday. That was kind of where my head was. I thought that would be the top three, Willits, Cade, and Ethan Holiday. But lo and behold, we didn't get back on track until pick 4 or 5. So, things kind of evened out after that. But, yeah, it was a little strange.
That was insane. Were you I know there was some fear within the fan base. Were you ever thinking that they were going to go Arnold at 10?
Day of watching on stream with those guys, there was a lot of talk about it in the chat. And there was a little bit of a fear. Now, granted, I don't know if I would have been mad that they would have went with Arnold and 10, I would have been slightly disappointed. I think there were better arms available. And then the fact that he went, I think it was the very pick after, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. I think at 10, it would have been okay. But I think I would only give that grade like a C. I think I give the Sox pick an A. I won't give it an A plus or, you know, minus or anything. I give it a straight A in Billy Carlson. Picking, Arnold would have been, that would have been no more than, no better than a C, maybe even a C minus for me. So how about you? What do you think?
I mean, I liked Arnold. It had to be a bat for me. There's so much pitching in the White Sox system. There's not enough bats.
Well, what if it was Cruz Schoolcraft and go two ways? What a two way player.
Yeah, I would have, I don't know if I would have been here today. I think Carlson's got a better shot of being a two way player than Schoolcraft.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. So it was like some of the reports I read on him. Some guys, like, I don't know if they're homers or what. I didn't like to see who was writing these things, but the way they talked about Cruz Schoolcraft, like, it was like the next Ohtani, and I'm like, whoa. Pumped up brakes, dude. Like, what are we talking about here? But anywho. Good evening, Scott. Good to see you, man. Thanks for checking in. All right. Where you want to go next? You want to keep going with the draft a little bit? You want to, anything you want to talk about? I mean, I know I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the draft, but, you know.
Yeah, it's only been run down by everybody on this.
Yeah, I mean, it's Wednesday. The draft hangover is
past. You have a favorite pick outside on day two?
Yeah, the guy they picked in the fifth round. What the hell is his name now?
That was going to be mine, too. Gabe Davis from Oklahoma
State. Gabe Davis, thank you. Yes. Yeah.
Not the Bills receiver.
No. Yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that one. But why don't you go ahead, since I stole it from you, why don't you go ahead and talk about him a little bit?
I mean, listen, the dude's 6'9", triple-digit fastball. Like, what else is there to say? I mean, there's health concerns. Like, that's why he fell. I think he was a top 60 guy if he stays healthy. He gives me a ton of, like, Grant Taylor vibes. Obviously, Grant Taylor's not 6'9", and Taylor didn't have the command issues. But, like, they're going to try him as a starter. I think that's the responsible thing to do. But, man, I think he's a really high-floor guy just because of the – like, if this all fails, like, he's still going to be a dynamite reliever. Just electric arm with an insane amount of I mean, 6'9". Those triple digits. It looks like it's coming at you at 106. Good luck.
Yeah.
Like I said, the command issues are there, but man, if he could.
Yeah, but that extreme forward release point that a lot of those tall guys have, you know, I think of, like, you know, going back to when 6'9 wasn't a thing in baseball, and, you know, Randy Johnson comes up and, you know, they're calling the big unit, and, you know, you can say what you want about Randy Johnson. You know, obviously Hall of Famer we're talking about here. Guy had a absolutely stellar career. I'm not saying these guys coming behind him are going to be Randy Johnson, but the very first time I saw Randy Johnson pitch and the length that he had at his release point, and you see the radar gun, but you see the way the ball moves. There's something about that the tall guy with the really forward release point that just seems to perplex hitters. And now the White Sox have a few of them, and these aren't guys that are just throwing 95 with a long release point. They're throwing triple digits with these release points. So, you know, something to be excited about. What's up, Toss? How you doing today? Welcome back. Saw you on Sunday evening when we were in the chat with the draft. You're a little bit late for our thoughts on Carlson and Fauske.
A plus.
We're just saying, I'll just say this much. Instead of going back over everything we discussed already this evening, I'll say that we are extremely pleased with the first few picks. And really overall. With the draft.
Yeah, very good draft.
I mean, I feel like from top to bottom, you know, obviously there's going to be question marks around some of these guys. There's one or two guys I'm not even sure they're going to be able to sign, but it's in the later rounds and it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I mean,
said they're signing everybody.
Are they? Okay.
I think James came out and said that.
Ralph checking in. Ralph wants to know what makes next year's draft better. I'll tell you what makes next year's draft better. There is a ton of guys who have already been talked about for a couple of years who are just not eligible. There's a couple of them that even tried to switch up their eligibility to try to get in this year and rework that and weren't able to. But there's some guys, there are some really, really big bats. And there are some 17-year-olds that are throwing triple digits. There are prep guys out there right now that are hitting 99, 100. So
there's three superstar, college shortstops. There's a couple of insane college or prep bats. And there's some really good arms. It's a very, very good draft class for the White Sox.
Yeah, I agree. And, with the odds of the White Sox, they're going to have the highest odds for, getting the number one overall pick in the lottery. Don't be shocked if they don't get it, we've seen crazy things happen. But I would say that, obviously there's no chance to them drafting any lower than 5. But
I think 7, but it's really
is it 7
to pick outside the top 5?
Okay. But either way, this is again. You're hoping that you'd be. If we get anywhere in the top 3, I think we're golden. Like you said, there's 3 just monsters out there, and don't ask me what the names are right now. I'm drawing a blank.
Shout out Justin LeBron. That's the only name I know.
There you go.
We're not a prospect guy, Justin LeBron, but Alabama kid. I think the Wake Forest guys up there. I think there's a California, UCLA maybe.
Yeah, there's insane. The prep class is insane too.
Yeah.
Like I was saying, there's a bunch of prep guys that were trying to reclass themselves to get into the draft this year and weren't able to do it, just couldn't get the eligibility. These guys, the reason they're trying to do that is because they know they're going to get drafted high. They're going to get that payday. These are guys that are going to sign immediately. These are guys that are probably there's a handful of guys that are 17 years old right now that can be fast movers in minor league systems. Guys that you might see within 2 years of being drafted, they're going to be 19, 20 years old coming up and playing their game. So, some of these guys harken back, think back to Griffey when he came up, he was just a kid. There's going to be a few of those out there. So I think what we're looking at next year, I think the Sox are in a fantastic position. And it's a good thing that, like you said, it's a good thing that they weren't excluded or they were excluded from the lottery this year so that they're not excluded in next year's. So that's really the big thing. What's up, Wolf? Uncle Ted, thanks for checking in.
Yeah, just to quickly wrap it up, I think there's 5 guys that would have – I think all 5 guys – there's 5 guys that would have went 1 this year. That's how good the 26 class is. I looked it up. Chalowski is a shortstop from UCLA. Burris is a center fielder from Georgia Tech. Then you have Jacob Lombard, who's the brother of George Lombard, the monster dude in the Yankee system. Grady Emerson's a prep bat from Texas. And then Justin LeBron. I think all 5 of those guys go number 1 in 25. Obviously, with slot stuff, and if the Nationals wanted to save money anyway, it probably doesn't happen. But
Right. Uncle Ted, he's been critical of the White Sox draft since we were on and we were in the chat on Sunday. He says White Sox drafted a right-handed defense first prep shortstop. Good luck with that. Guarantee you Glitz will never see him play. Ted, I'm going to have to disagree with you. He is a defense first shortstop, but the hit tool's there, dude. It's there. I would implore you to go look at all the video you can on this guy and read up on everything you can, because people acting like there's no bat is absolutely ridiculous. There's plenty of bat there. Is he profiled to hit you 25, 30 home runs right now? No. But he's also only 18 years old and he's going to grow. So, Dub Man wants to know how many draft picks from the 25 draft will be top 15 on the White Sox top process list. I'm going to go with probably the first 5. After that, it's going to get murky. I would say Yeah, possibly. Possibly.
Say, maybe, I don't know. Maybe four. Well, I guess there's been a bunch of graduations, though.
Yeah, so. There has. And that's the reason I say five. I think Carlson probably goes in at three in there immediately. Yeah. He's going to be number three. I think Falski is somewhere inside the top 10. And then I think you probably get a handful of the arms that are going to come in. I would say two or three arms that are going to come in between, you know, like 8 and 15.
I really like that Florida shortstop, by the way. He's got a lot of interest. I liked both their college shortstops. The guy, Lodis at third. I think both those guys are going to move quickly. And obviously the Sox have a ton of middle infielders. And, you know, we've talked about that. But, you know, nice thing about middle infielders is you can play them anywhere. I mean, that's kind of the thought.
So there were some folks that weren't really pleased with Lodis. I think Lodis is the guy who can bring you, you know, like the Sox. There was a lot of folks who were hoping Sox would go with some power, better power, especially in the home field. I think Lodis brings you some of that power that you're looking for. Does he sell out for that power? Sure.
Yeah.
Wait, Lodis? Yeah, Lodis. He's the third baseman, right?
No, no. You're thinking of the Petrio or.
Oh, that's right, DePietro or whatever his name is. He was a third baseman. The seventh
rounder, yeah.
College third baseman. University of Rhode Island. Yeah, he's going to bring you some of that pop, but the only problem is he's going to sell out for that pop. He's going to K it quite a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I do like the fact, I mean, really quickly, we're going to spend a lot of time on the trade deadline here, so I want to move on from the draft. Real quick, you mentioned before the show started, what did you think about all the shortstops drafted?
I mean, like I said, I think there's a lot of overreaction of, like, just because I don't think, like, you can move shortstops anywhere. And, I mean, I don't know where it's going to happen because there's going to be an interesting thing that the Sox, I think, are going to have to deal with here shortly because you're going to have Bonnemer, who's probably going to be in high A by the time this rolls around. But then you have the Florida kid, I can't remember his name, and Lodis, who are both shortstops. Lodis, I think, is long-term second baseman, but Shirley says they're going to try everything to play him at short. I mean, they have a really – it's – throughout the system, it's going to work itself out. I just think, like, when you get to the majors, you might have to see some guys move. But, like, you can do it. Like, Tatis, you got to think, like, just for example, Tatis is one of the best, I think, is the best defensive right fielder in baseball. Baez is a top center fielder in baseball. Like, I just think that, like, there's a ton of defensive flexibility with these guys. And I don't know if you have, I mean, you already have a ton of middle infielders. I mean, you have a guy, you know, Jeurel Perez, Albertus, who can't get off the IL. And not to add, I mean, you have Mydroff, Montgomery, Vargas. I mean, there was a ton. So I am very high on the draft the shortstop and figure it out later.
Yeah, me too. And we talked about this, you know, a little bit the past weeks coming up to the draft here. it was a plan that Getz kind of said was going to be something that they were employing because if you look at, especially prep shortstops, if you look at them, the reason they're playing shortstop in high school is because they are the best player on the team. It's the most used and complicated position on the field, I'll say. And I'll say second base is right there with it. Second base has got a ton of responsibility. When you've got double plays and wheel plays and all these other things that are happening on the field, but the nobody on the field touches the ball more than a shortstop, other than maybe the first baseman. But you know, obviously, it's not quite the same. And when you've got your best athletic player there, those are the guys you can move around later on if they're not going to stick. You know, I don't see a world anywhere where Billy Carlson moves away from shortstop because he's that good. He is that good. There's no reason for him to move anywhere. He is going to be a shortstop no matter where he goes. Unless, of course, you end up with a place where you've got a solid team and and he's the last piece and you have to move him and you've got a guy who's maybe a little bit better or I shouldn't say better, but he might, Billy Carlson might be better suited for like a corner outfield position because he does have that cannon for an arm and does have the athletic ability to play it. And you don't have, you've got a really good shortstop on your roster already, and you don't really have anywhere else to put that other guy. That's the only reason I ever see it. But he's going to be the guy who's going to be, Ted, take it easy, buddy. I think you need to do some homework, bro. I'm not even gonna entertain these comments in the chat, man. I mean, I get it, frustrated, and that's fine. You can be. Maybe you're right. Maybe we're all wrong. But everything out there says he's got plenty of offense. He's just, when they say defense first, they say defense first because he's that good defensively.
Yeah.
He was the best defensive player in the draft at any single position. And that's the only reason you're hearing about his defense more than his offense. But he's got plenty of offense. So
yeah, quickly, Ralph asked a couple of good questions talking about Billy Carlson. He's definitely a top 100 guy.
Yes. Probably a top 60, 75. Yeah, I would say between 60 and 90 is somewhere where I would pencil him in. But yeah, he's definitely a top 100 guy.
Also asked about the speed. I'd say he's above average runner, but not a like top tier speed guy. I'd say he'll steal bags. It's just not, he's not going to lead the league in stolen bags.
No, but he's got plenty of speed. He's got plenty of speed. He will definitely swipe some bags. He will definitely take some extra bases. Definitely stretch the, stretch a single into a double or a double into a triple on occasion. He's one of those types of players. He's a dog. There's plenty of video out there. You need to go out and watch it. I mean, the guy's awesome. He really is. He really is exciting to watch play. And if you haven't done that, I suggest you do it. So,
100%.
All right, let's move on, man. We're already over the 40-minute mark here, and we were actually kind of, the whole world is talked about the draft. Apparently, the draft hangover is still going. And obviously with this White Sox team where they're at, the draft is important. I get it. But what else is important? The trade deadline, which is approaching quickly. I think we should talk about that a little bit. I know you and I were talking a little bit earlier this week via text, and you wanted to get into this stuff because you're thinking that things are going to get moving before now and next week's show. And I won't disagree with that, although I don't know if we see any of the bigger moves that we're hoping to see happen between now and then. But I think we should get into it. Who of the draft, who of the likely traded players would you like to get into first?
I was going to do this in terms of like who's most likely to get traded, and then
okay, let's do that. I'll let you take the reins on this. Like, why don't you lead us, and I'll give you my thoughts, man.
All right, Adrian Hauser, he's gone, right? Like that's a done deal.
Yeah, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion.
1 year deal. He seems like the most likely to A, bring a solid return, and B, be traded. A ton of teams need starting pitching. Blue Jays, Dodgers, Cubs, Astros, Cardinals. Like, there's so many. Michael A. Taylor. I want to bring this up because I have the perfect fit, and he is just Michael A. Taylor. I'm calling it now, is going to be a Chicago Cub. They need a fourth outfielder desperately. They need a playoff performer. He does that. Good defense. Like, okay hitter. Not great, but like, Michael A. Taylor makes way too much sense to the Cubs. He's the most confident fit I have.
So let me ask you this, because I also, believe it or not, this is weird. We haven't talked about this. I want to clarify this to our chat and to our listeners. You and I have not bounced any of this off of each other before we have gone live tonight. And it's crazy that, we're almost of one mind as we're talking about, Gabe Davis earlier and some of our thoughts on some of these other guys. And now you're bringing up Michael A. Taylor. And I 100% was going to say, I believe Michael A. Taylor is going to the Cubs. But here's I want to add to that. I could see a package going to the Cubs because you mentioned the one thing that I believe the Cubs need more than anything, and it's starting pitching. And yeah. I could see them packaging Adrian Hauser with Michael A. Taylor.
100%.
And I think, 100%. You know, there's already a really good relationship between the Cubs and the White Sox. You know, there's obviously when you're in the same city, it's easy to get out and take a look at these guys. So, you know, I just think that if there's a possibility and there's a chance, you know, the Cubs that went through, you know, this early part of the season where they were just rolling. And, you know, as Sox fans, it's hard to ignore because every Cub fan in the world is talking about, you turn the radio on, you turn the TV on. That's all they're talking about. Oh, my God, have you seen the Cubs? Have you seen the Cubs? They're, you know, they're winning games. They're beating teams. And the thing was the first 2 months of the season, they were beating teams that were supposed to beat.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we kind of got into a point, you know, in like May and June, you know, middle of May, end of May, early June, where, oh, the Cubs now are playing a bit of a tougher schedule and they're falling off. And Cubs fans were losing their minds. Oh, we should have did this and we should have did that. It was like, man, you guys sound like the biggest bunch of, you know, flip-flops in the world. The Cubs are the best team in the league, and now they're losing. They suck. What are we doing? No. They just played some talent. It was expected. And they don't have pitching. And I think that's where Adrian Hauser comes in.
100%.
So, agreed. That's my rant. I just wanted to throw it
out there. But I am seriously all in on Michael Taylor going to the Cubs. If I had to put like my money on one guy going to a certain spot, Michael Taylor to Cubs.
What kind of return do you think you get for Michael A. Taylor in that position without Adrian Hauser?
I think it'll be similar to like, I don't even know. I had like, I actually mocked up all the trades. I was going to make a Twitter post about it, but that's a whole different story. I don't know. You probably get a flyer, either a DSL guy or like something. And I mean, I said this on Twitter earlier. I don't think the Sox get a top 10 prospect in their system back. Like, I don't think the return's there. But I think there's a whole lot of like 10 through 30. Like, I really think like this is the deadline that they just completely backfill. Like, the depth of the system comes forward and you get a lot of dart throws.
And I'm okay with that. I'm completely okay with that because what I'm thinking, my thought process on that is and that's kind of again, exactly where my head was when you start getting these guys 10, 12, 15, 18, 20. You know, in the White Sox farm system, which is, you know, early in the season was kind of highly ranked. You know, there have been some graduations, but maybe have tanked their value. And I haven't seen any of the midseason rankings come out recently. I don't know where everybody's calling the White Sox system right now, but when you start getting like, if you start making these trades like Michael A. Taylor, where you get a guy who slots in at like 15. 18, 20, if even that, in your farm system, but he's only 19, 20 years old. And there's maybe some value, some ceiling that can be pushed in there. Maybe he's got he's not a 4 or 5 tool complete player, but he's got 2 or 3 really outstanding tools that keep him lower in a system right now and has room to grow later on. Especially with the new coaching staff and new developmental team that the White Sox have put together the last couple of years. I'm here for it, dude. You know, you might find a diamond in the rough. You might get that guy like when we traded Fernando Tatis Jr.
Yeah.
To the Padres. 100%. And nobody really thought he was going to be anything. And then a couple of years later, you're like, whoa, this kid's, you know, amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If the White Sox can pick up 1 or 2 guys like that, you never know where this thing could go.
I mean, look at Chase Mydroth. Like, he was a guy who was considered like a throw-in. Obviously, everybody was in on, you know, Montgomery and Teal. And he was like the 15th guy in their system. And he ends up being a really solid player. Now he's cooled off. But, you know, I mean, it's 13th best prospect is where he was ranked coming into the season. If you get some of those guys where, like, you know, you're not talking about complete dart throws here. Like, there's something here. Especially with how good the Sox system is. You know, I think there's, you know, something to say about getting a bunch of dart throws. And like you said, if you get really young guys, you know, DSL guys or single A guys or, you know, former higher picks. And I wanted to bring this up during the draft and I totally bleeped on it. But just, you know, looking at the draft haul, it's clear that Getz trusts the development process. Going to a bunch of prep guys, the pitchers they grabbed were, you know, kind of high upside picks. There's a lot of upside in the White Sox draft. Like, it's clear, and I said this last year privately because I wasn't here, that, you know, that's why they took Hagen Smith, is because Getz trusted Bannister, that he trusted the pitching side. It's clear now after seeing Carlson go, Fauci go, a bunch of prep guys, that there's trust now in the hitting department of
Ryan Fuller and the developmental team, the developmental staff, and what we've got going on at the lower levels in the minor league system. It's a huge vote of confidence. I think, you know, we've talked about this, you know, a bunch early this year and last year before you were on the show, when Ian and I were doing a show together, you know, the thing was everybody was upset about a lot of these hires that were coming from the Kansas City Royals. But if you look at what the Royals have done since, like, you know, 16 and when they were, you know, they went from being World Series winners and playoff contenders to being in the absolute dregs of baseball. And they've climbed back out of that, and they've got a bunch of young guys who are, you know, up and comers or, you know, turning into stars. That's the kind of thing I want to see happen within the White Sox organization. I don't expect to see it overnight, but we're already seeing some of those changes. We're already seeing some of the development kind of take a different turn. So I'm with you 100%. I believe that is a vote of confidence in Ryan Fuller and his ability to develop bats in the system.
And, you know, like, Fuller's the face of it, but there have been, like, the rumor was there was over 40 analytical staff people brought in this offseason. 40. I mean, that's a lot of – there's so much going into the analytical side, you know, the track it machines. You can literally see it. The Sox play better at home. They hit better at home. Look at Lenin Sosa's splits. Look at my draws. Like, every player, for the most part, hits better at home where the White Sox have the track it machine. You know, and that's just kind of the focus of there's trust now. There's an entire developmental staff. This isn't the team it was behind the scenes 2 years ago. And it's going to take some time to show that. But, I mean, there's some significant improvements that were made over the last 2 years to make this more of a Tampa Bay Rays type ran organization, of just trying to develop as much as possible.
Yeah, let's just hope we don't trade them all away like the Tampa Bay Rays like to do. You know, Randy Rosarino is the one that sticks out with me in the last couple of years here when they – oh, that was just – and I knew when he was a rook coming up, I'm like, this guy's special. And then they dumped him midseason, and he went on, and he was just a phenom.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, this guy's pretty fantastic. So I want to address a couple of the questions in the chat here before we move on. We have a little bit more trade deadline stuff to talk here, so we'll get into that. But I wanted to hit on Doveman comment here, because this is something you and I were talking about pre-show. The catcher from Boston and the outfielder from Toronto that the Sox just traded for are good ads and players Sox should trade for. And I am in complete agreement with that, but Jacob had some thoughts on Sable, which is the catcher. Why don't you go ahead and throw those out there at the chat a little bit? Let's talk about that and, you know, kind of where your head is. And
yeah, I mean, we'll see, right? I mean, he's a guy who plays a bunch of positions, but he's been traded twice in the last, you know, whatever, like 7 months. He was traded in the offseason. I mean, he's a career 237 hitter, 689 OPS. If that's where you get him back to, perfect. If not, good luck. He's a 354 OPS this year. I would have rather seen Corey Lee. That's just my opinion. I get it. They're trying to trade Corey Lee. That's later in the show. But listen, he's a bat-to-ball guy. We'll see. I mean, interesting move. I mean, it doesn't hurt, right? It's cash considerations. And we'll see if this gets, you know, Teal and Caro back in the lineup, as every single White Sox fan has been begging for the past 2 weeks, except for me. He does that, so.
You blanked for a second. I think that's cool. Back. Yeah, you're back. You're fine.
Listen, this is the best my Wi-Fi's done in a while.
No, we're good, man. You're totally good, brother. Here's my thought on the trade, and it's especially Sable, is I believe this signals exactly what I have been talking about since the offseason in the acquisition of catcher upon catcher upon catcher early on in 2025, long before we saw camp. And that thought is basically, I think Chris Getz knows that catcher is a position of value. It is one that teams are always looking for. And when you load up on that, and you have so many throughout your system that you don't know where to play them, that you're actually trying them at other positions, is when you can use them as trade bait. And I believe that not only Corey Lee, but there's probably one or two other catchers that are on the trade block right now as we speak that are probably going to go away at some point over the next couple weeks. Corey Lee's pretty much a given. He's going somewhere. I would think that there might be one or two others within the system as well, including Sable. Sable could be on the block as well. Yeah, I mean, right. we got him now, and he could be packaged up in something later on. Who knows? I don't know. But I'm of the thought that picking up catchers is always a good idea, unless he's just an absolute complete bum. And then, like you said, the other thing is Sable plays a bunch of positions. So, you know, you can throw him out there at the corners and the infield. He's got enough of a cannon to where if he can run around in the outfield, he can do that as well. I think it's a good move. And I agree with the statement that it is the type of player that the White Sox should be trading for. So, yeah. And then there was one other comment that I wanted to get into. Where is it at here? Oh, Ralph asks, yes. Will the trade deadline yield more position players? We are deep in pitching still, but after the recent call-ups, need more position players. I have thoughts on that, but I would like to hear from you and what you think.
I think we're going to agree. I actually think it's going to be pitcher heavy. I think you saw it last year. Teams are unwilling to get rid of hitters. That's why we got Miguel Vargas. Like, that was the best hitter that Chris Getz could find. And maybe that's the position Getz is in again this year, where he just wants hitters, and so the returns will be less than favorable. But teams are more willing to give up pitching, and I think you're okay with that. If the strategy is going to become here over the next couple of years to just draft a bunch of hitters and trade for pitching, I think I'm okay with it. It'll be interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, the saying goes, you can never have too many pitchers. White Sox are already, like, kind of there. But I guess we'll add more. But I do think there's potential for it to be more pitcher heavy just because teams are so unwilling to part ways with quality hitters. But maybe because you're trading for the back end that there's more willingness to give up those type of guys. Hitting wise, I just know that, like, you know, everybody hated on the Miguel Vargas trade, but I truly deep down believe that was the best hitter that the White Sox thought they could get back for Fetty.
And I mean, thank God that Miguel Vargas has turned himself into a serviceable hitter.
Yeah.
You know, is he become an absolute monster? No, not yet. Is the potential there? Looks that way. I mean, you know, I don't know, give him another year under his belt. And if we get him some protection in the lineup, if we get any of these guys some protection in the lineup, they might be dangerous. It's difficult to say at this point, but the fact of the matter is, you know, I had Vega on my face on that trade, and I'll take it. I will happily be glad to be wrong about guys like that. My answer to Ralph's question about will it yield more position players or pitchers is, I'm going to say it depends on who the trade partner is, really. I think, you know, it was brought up to package Smith, Hauser, and Michael A. Taylor to go to the Cubs. But one of the other potential suitors out there for especially pitching is the Marlins. I think, or I'm sorry, not the Marlins, the Mariners. The M's are, they are a team that they could probably use another outfielder and they could use another pitcher. And I think when you start looking at their farm system, there's a chance that there might be a hitter or two that you can peel away from them deeper in their farm. You know, you never know.
They have so many.
You know, there's guys that are a little bit lower in their farm system that are intriguing to me. And I think that if we can, you know, you're not going to get, like you said, you're not going to get a probably from any of these teams, no matter who we trade, unless it's like a slam dunk package where like Luis Robert Jr., Adrian Hauser, Shane Smith, and Michael A. Taylor all go to the same team. You are not prying a top five guy out of any farm system right now. It's just not going to happen. Unfortunately, Luis Robert Jr.'s return to health this year, or at least mostly healthy this year, has not yielded a lot of offensive production. But his WOBA numbers are better than it, or his ex-WOBA numbers are better than his regular WOBA numbers. They're still not great. He is, I think he's 22 of 28 or better on a stolen base attempt somewhere in there. Was leading the league for the better part of the first half of the season in stolen bases. You know, and then the other thing that we've been talking about all year is Luis Robert Jr. is thought of as likely having some successes just getting away from the environment that he's in. He, even if the White Sox environment has gotten better this year, he was there during the time where things were just an absolute mess, where there were cliques in the clubhouse. There were guys who had no work ethic, you know, guys that were taking days off, faking injuries. You know, guys who were talking crap amongst each other, fights in the locker room, and that those guys might not be around anymore, but the stench of that is still there.
Yeah.
You're still showing up to the same building every day. That, I don't know if you've ever been a job where even after things improve, you just don't feel right there because there's something inside of you emotionally has changed, has made you bitter. And you go somewhere else, it might be just the same, but it feels better. It feels different. I think there's a lot of thought. Right. Look at Andrew Vaughn. It's only a handful of games. I still don't know. But, you know, here's the other thing is Andrew Vaughn might be held more accountable where he was, where he is now. He heard the reports coming out about people talking about his work ethic, which, from what I'm hearing, is 100% true. So, yeah, I don't know. I think that I think it all just depends on who your suitors are for your trade candidates and what you get back in return.
Agreed.
So I brought up Luis Robert. Let's talk about him a little bit.
Yeah.
Bob Nightingale. Good old Boob has come out, said recently.
AKA Jerry Reinsdorf's burner.
I believe it was Boob, right. He's got the bat phone to Reinsdorf's Reinsdorf's office. But I believe it was Boob that said now there's like Luis Robert Jr. is actually getting more interest than originally thought. And the interest is up to eight teams.
I think Heyman reported the eight teams, but
oh, was it John? Yeah, John Heyman. Yeah, I think it was Heyman. That sounds right. You're right. Probably was. Although there was no mention of who the eight teams were, I'm pretty sure we could probably guess most of them, if not all of them.
I mean, only half the league is in contention. Only half the team. I mean, you could get there.
Feel like. Yeah, and I mean, if you go back and you look at the history of the last 6 months, and you look at the number of teams that were in, even going back to like middle of last year when a lot of people thought we should have traded Luis Robert Jr., you go back to like the Dodgers, the Giants, the Mets. Who else is in there? The Reds. The Mariners were in there, in the last couple of months. Now the big one is like the Padres.
Yep.
What is that? 5, 6? It's gotta be 5 or 6. I think the Yankees were in there at one point within the last year.
You mentioned the Mets.
I did mention the Mets.
Phillies, I think you already mentioned.
I don't think I said the Phillies. I think I said the Reds, but the Phillies were in there at one point. So I would guess, okay, so let's do this. The Phillies, the Reds, the Mets, that's three. The Padres is the most recent one I've been hearing. That's four. Mariners, Giants, Dodgers.
Heck, I'd throw the Astros in there.
And maybe the Astros. Yeah, that's eight right there.
That's eight.
So, yeah.
I'm Orioles, if they were. There's so many teams. It's insane. That could use. I mean, there's not a lot of good center fielders in the league. Like, it's like what Buxton, PCA, Julio, Merrill.
What about the Jays?
Varsho's been Jays? Pretty solid for them.
Yeah, Dalton Varsho.
He's hurt, though.
So I'm saying.
I don't know how.
And they're only like two games up on the Yankees. That, I mean, outside of like Baltimore, that division, the whole division's like fairly tight. I think they're all within like four or five games.
Yeah.
Right?
So even like the Blue Jays, like their corners aren't that good. Like you could move Varsho to the corner and then have Robert.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing about Robert is everybody says he's not great offensively. He's been mashing lefties this year.
It's
do like you maybe start him out in a platoon to get some of his confidence back?
Right.
You know, it doesn't bode well for a return for the White Sox when the team you're trading for him, you're trading him away to, is looking at him as a platoon player against lefties only. But the idea that 2023 isn't that far removed and he had a really stellar season, you know, Gold Glove and Gallagher defense and you know, just hit the cover off the ball and hasn't done it since. Obviously injuries and you know, bad press and bad clubhouse have done him in. He gets that change of scenery. What happens? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Platooning him against lefties might give you that. Might give it that confidence, and we might see a return to Luis Robert, and I'm sure Sox fans will be absolutely up in arms when that happens, but I don't know. Any predictions on where Luis Robert goes?
My guess is still the Phillies. It could be the Reds. I think Phillies, Reds, Padres is my 1-2-3. But then, okay. You, like you said, I think you have like five or six other teams that I think you could argue could use a center fielder. Like there's so little out center fielders that have the potential offensively that Luis Robert does. And a potential is great. I mean, you have to turn it into something, but I mean, when you add the defense, I mean, he's a true win healthy and win good. Like if you could fix him, he's a true five-star player in center field. Like it's there. You gotta find it. And gotta hope that he returns back to it. And he has had a couple of better weeks. Not great, not anything outstanding, but it's getting a little bit better. Yeah, man, I don't know. I think the return's going to be disappointing, but I think he has to go because I don't think they're going to bring him back on a $20 million option next year. I don't think there's a shot Sox bring him back unless he has an insane second half.
Yeah, I mean, if the rumors are true that there's eight teams interested, and this is the reason why I said I don't think all of these trades are going to happen, you know, within the next week. I think you probably listen to what all these eight teams have to say about their interest in Luis Robert Jr. and you drag that conversation out, hoping that a little time off here at the All-Star break gets him into a little bit of a hot streak. You know, maybe he's had some time to work on whatever it is he needed to work on to get himself back, to get him back to like when in spring in camp, when we were in spring training. His eye was, and his eye's been better all year. Like, don't get me wrong, but he wasn't chasing, and he got back in after like the first month of the season. It looked like he started to chase that down and away pitch, that slider or that hard slurve down and away. It's just his Achilles heel. And early in the season, and definitely during spring training and in camp, he was not chasing that pitch. If you can get him to work on that, maybe he has a little bit of a hot streak here over the next couple of weeks. and you do finally get maybe a little bit of a surge and create maybe a little bit of a bidding war between a couple of teams. But I think that's probably, unless Getz is bowled over by somebody's offer, I think he's going to be one of the last shoes to drop.
Yeah.
Is at this point, what's it hurt to hold out on him? You know, he's hitting like 190. You know what right. I mean? Like, you're not, at this point, you if he doesn't pick it up, you've already held on to him too long.
Yeah.
So what's another couple weeks? You know what I mean? And hope that maybe he has a bit of a hot streak. Just my thought there. So Ralph wants to know, do you think we see another three-team trade at this deadline from Getz? And I'm maybe. Just going to say, I don't know.
Robert trade, I guess, could be if they're depending on where they're funneling money, but because I would assume that I think it's been reported that they're going to include cash now,
yeah,
in a trade for Robert.
And it actually brings me to my next and probably last point on the trade deadline. Unless you want to talk about something else, but please finish your thought.
No, that was really it. I mean, that was they're going to probably include cash, which will help.
Yeah, yeah. I mean. You almost kind of have to at yeah. this point. I mean, if you want them off the books and you want to get anything back, you know, that's just the way it's going to have to go. I do see a potential for a package deal where you're not trading Luis Robert by himself and you're including some cash. And that's the only way Chris Getz really gets anything of value in return. And I don't expect huge value anywhere. So you're going to have to get creative to get something that at least makes you feel like, okay, we didn't keep this guy so long that we got absolutely nothing for him.
Yeah.
Especially when he does go somewhere else and turn around.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah. Anything else you want to talk about on Luis?
Not really. I mean, and to kind of final up the trade deadline, because it's getting late here. I think the Sox are in a good position of, like, they have a ton of bullpen pieces. Obviously, we talked about Corey Lee. They have a bunch of interesting hitters. I think Chris Getz had a good offseason of like bringing guys in who are now going to be flippable at the deadline. So it'll be an exciting next week. I would expect at least one move is made, but we'll see.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you. I did have one last question on the trade deadline before we move on to our hot takes and heaters, but maybe I should just make this my hot take to end the show. I was going to ask you what you thought about this, but I'm just going to go ahead and say that I don't believe Andrew Benintendi is going to be with the White Sox for the rest of the season. I do believe they find a trade partner for him. That's my hot take.
So think? He was one of my guys that I had 50-50. Like I ranked everybody by like percentages. Like the Sox want to trade him. The Sox would love to get rid
they're
of
gonna,
him.
They're going to include money. I didn't say they weren't going to include money.
Right. No. And I think if you're going to include money, but like how much money are you including? Because I think he still has like 2 years left on his deal. Like there's a market for him. Like the Padres make sense. The bat's there. He's a clutch hitter. Postseason experience. The defense is horrid. It's not bad, but the arm is bad. Like the arm is really bad.
He's got a noodle for an arm, dude.
Yeah. I don't. I could see it happen. I mean, it's going to depend on like if a team will trade you anything. Like, there's going to be no return coming back, and you're going to have to include money. But it's worth it. Like, it's totally worth it if it frees you up from the $25 million.
So, my thought, and the reason I even say that I don't believe he's going to be with the White Sox, is just the number of injuries that have occurred over the last month in outfielders across the league. There's been a spate of injuries league-wide, and not all of them are, you know, season-ending or even long-term injuries, but some of the contenders out there do have some spots where they need to fill a hole for, you know, let's say a month or so. Guys are 30-day, maybe even 60-day, probably be back before the end of the season when they're making their playoff pushes, but you got to make the playoffs to make right. that playoff push. And I think Andrew Benintendi at least gives you a serviceable bat, especially in a lineup with some protection. that he's not offered in the White Sox lineup, and he's got a little bit of pop. So I think for the White Sox, eating, if you eat, you know, more than half of that money because of their current payroll and where it's at and where it's projected to be over the next season or two, it, you know, well below what should be standard for an MLB, you know, operation. I believe they can afford to throw quite a bit of money into that deal just to get a lot of the money off the books and open up a spot for, you know, somebody who maybe needs a shot, you know, or at least a little bit more of a look than they're getting in the White Sox organization. Who that is, I don't really know. But, you know, as the trade deadline looms, you never know. We might see one or two of those guys come in where we can throw out there. And the reality is we just want to get that contract off the books.
Yeah. I mean, and to his credit, I mean, he's got a 900 OPS against lefties. Like, there's – even if you're going to – if that's going to be your role, right? Like, you're going to bring a guy in to just, you know, fill a spot while everybody's injured. At least you're then still getting a platoon guy with some experience. Like, I think there's a way you can talk me into that.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a funny feeling that it's going to happen. So that's my hot take.
You wanna go ahead? Hot takes.
Yeah, let's go. Let's see.
Let's keep it with the deadline for a moment. One of Davis Martin, Sean Burke, Jonathan Cannon is traded, and they are traded to the Orioles. The Orioles have a young core that they can't go into another rebuild. They need young, controllable, cheap pitching. I think it makes a ton of sense. They still have a ton of prospects. I think one of those three goes there.
Yeah, ridiculous prospect hugging has gotten them nowhere but bottom of the pack in the AL East.
Yeah.
I think they're probably ready to move on from that and, like you said, build around that core. And, again, they're only what, like – I don't know. They're like 10 games out or something. I mean, it's they're not in contention this year, but if you give them a young controllable arm that they can mold over the next season or two to get back into contention in that division, I can agree with that. It's a little spicy, but I'll take it.
All right. This one's going to probably everybody's either going to love this take or hate this take. Scrap the one player per team rule in the All-Star game. There's no reason for the Sox to have an All-Star. If you are horrible, the Rockies too. I understand Hunter Goodman's been good, but like, and I get it, this is going against the White Sox because the White Sox would not have an All-Star player. I don't need to see Shane Smith in the All-Star game. He doesn't deserve to be there. No offense to Shane Smith. Great dude, great player in the first couple months, but like, let's get rid of the one player per team. I think it dilutes the All-Star game. It seems like a participation trophy. Make All-Stars, earn it, get rid of the one player per team All-Star rule.
Okay, that's definitely a little hot. And the only reason I'll say that one's hot is because obviously Manfred is looking for as much viewership as possible. And the only way you keep, you know, if you exclude some markets, especially Chicago being the third largest market in baseball. Now, obviously, the White Sox don't operate like they're in the third largest market. I don't think they have the fan base of a third largest market team because, you know, those other guys up north, everybody seems to swing from their short and curlies. But, you know, I do believe that it's going to be difficult to ever change that. I don't disagree with you, but I don't think it's ever going to change.
Okay, here's my counter argument. For one, I get the revenue money. I think most of the revenue money, though, comes from, like, the jersey sales of people buying, like, I'll buy the NL All-Star Game jersey because it looks cool and I'll get Shane Smith on the back. Like, I saw a ton of, like, Garrett Crochet All-Star jerseys, which I think is fine. My argument, though, is, like, how many White Sox fans are turning into the game to watch Shane Smith that, like, wouldn't have already tuned in to just watch? Like, I feel like if you're tuning into the All-Star game to watch Shane Smith pitch, you're already a big enough, like, diehard baseball fan to just watch the All-Star game. That's my thought.
Okay, I'll give you that. But explain that to an ad executive who's got, you know, money in commercials that are going on during the All-Star game. or you know, pre and post game. And I think that's probably why it won't ever change.
All right, here's
the MLB new hot take. And the networks are selling, like Fox is selling
advertising
space at ridiculous prices just for a 30-second clip during that game. Or to, have a banner hanging somewhere something somewhere that's got a corporate logo on it. That stuff is costing a lot of money. And the only way to be able to sell that is to know that you're going to have the most amount of eyeballs on it. That's the only reason I don't see it happening. Yeah. I don't disagree with you at all. Because like you said, I sat here watching the game because I'm a baseball diehard.
Right.
And, my wife was like ready to put some other show on. I was like, I wanted to watch the All-Star game. She was like, okay. I was like, what? Really? She's like, yeah, it's fine. I was like, okay, that was way too easy. Like, what kind of drugs are you on right now? And I need to know so that I can lace everything you eat and drink with them. But, I'm going to watch, but that's just who I am. I didn't need to see Shane Smith one way or the other.
That was my thought, is I was going to watch the All-Star game regardless of whether or not Shane Smith pitched.
Wow. I'm going to hit this one really quickly because that is the hot take. That's the hot take of the season. Right there.
Is it crazy to say that I agree?
I would love to see it.
Pete Alonso is genuinely, listen, we're way too far away. But like, I've had this thought for a couple months now that
let me read it off real quick to those who are not watching us live. For those that are listening to us tomorrow or after in podcast form, 13 Dove Man. Sorry, hot take. Sox spend big for power. Kyle Schwarber and Pete Alonso. Man, if that happens, I'm here for it. I am so here for it. I don't know if those are the two guys I would necessarily. Pete Alonso, sure. I don't know about Schwarber. I mean, dude's got like 30 bombs already at this point in the season. He's like fourth or fifth overall in baseball with his bombs. I wouldn't be mad. I just don't know if he's the guy the Sox are going to target. But man, spend some money on a couple of power bats. We sit in one of the best hitters' parks in baseball.
Yeah,
we need some bangers.
No, I've had the thought for a while.
Not much in the system.
Yeah, no, and that's the issue. There's no power. Like there's none. Like other than King George, who can hit them to the 94. But like, dude, Pete Alonso, the Sox way overpaying. And I think that's okay for Pete Alonso because they pay nobody else. Makes way too much sense this offseason. Now you have to convince Pete Alonso to come here and you have to give him enough money to where it makes sense. Like you're going to have to overpay by like $10 million. But
which probably means you got to spend somewhere else too because Pete Alonso needs to know he's not going to be the only guy.
Right. And maybe it is Schwarber. But they need power desperately. They need home runs. They're second to last in the league. It makes a ton of sense. And they don't have any first baseman either. Like, there's not a first base prospect coming up. They need DH is empty.
My man.
Schwarber and Alonso make a lot of sense. I was going to save that for the offseason. That was going to be like last show of the year. Let's talk about the free.
Will definitely revisit that. Yeah, we'll get. Thank you, Dove Man, for that. Because, I will beat that drum up and down. I grew up during the years of. Like the White Sox just had first baseman, which seemed like forever. I mean, when I first became a White Sox, when I was first old enough to really understand baseball, like Greg Luzinski was just a banger of a White Sox first baseman, and DH. Kitty moving from left field and playing a little bit of DH and a little bit of first base here and there every now and again. But more often than the two of them were on the same team. They were hitting roof shots at the old Comiskey Park. Like I got a poster of them standing on the roof of the stadium with the balls in their hands. You know what I mean? Like it was cool. And then you go like the Frank Thomases and the Paul Canerkos. Like I grew up watching White Sox first basemen. That were just fun to watch. And we haven't had one. We haven't had one since Abreu. And like the last couple of years of Abreu weren't great.
Yeah.
So like Yeah, I'm ready, dude. Sign
my
me
entire
up.
Life. I mean, I was born in 02. It was like Frank Thomas. I don't remember. But then like it was Konerko and then Abreu. Like that was like, it was insane. That was the one thing the Sox are known for. But no, I think Alonso. Ralph asks how much for Schwarber, how many years? I don't know. It'll probably be like a 3-year deal. If you're talking about Schwarber, who's old, but.
Yeah, what is he like 31 now, right? He's on the wrong side of. Let's look.
But those guys those guys play. Like Schwarber's gonna hit bombs till he's 40 if he wants to. Like Carlos Santana's 40 and he's still hitting just tanks. I don't know. Man,
Kyle Schwarber is 32. Yeah. 32. So here's where he sits right now. Just quick run down the stats. He's hitting 247 with 30 dingers and 69 ribbies. He's only got 87 hits. 87 hits, 30 of them are dingers.
Yeah, dude.
Could you imagine him DHing here? If he was playing here every day, like, and I'm not saying Philly's like a tough bark to hit it out of, you know, but you play half of your home games. You play half of your games at home here in the sell or the rate or whatever you want to call it. It's still Comiskey. Whatever. It's not really ever since they knocked down the original Comiskey, in my opinion, but whatever. There's a chance he's got 35, 38 right now.
Right.
You know, he's up there with Big Dumper at 38 dingers.
Great nickname, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, so. Benintendi's got the most home runs right now for the Sox with 11. 11.
Yeah.
Did you know that the White Sox highest qualified hitter batting average wise is Miguel Vargas and he's hitting like 202? That's the White Sox leader in qualified batting average is 202.
Yeah, it's awful. It's awful.
Horrible. All right. Before this gets even
shout out to Lenin Sosa though. Every week. I'm doing it.
People love Sosa. Shout out Chief Keef.
Screw the haters, is all I gotta say.
Andrew Vaughn for making
Whatever. It's been a handful of games. He'll come back. It's been like 10 maybe he doesn't. I don't know.
I hope he does. I got into like Twitter beef with Brewers people, which was weird because I like Milwaukee. And I'm not a Twitter beef guy. It was a really interesting, I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, this is falling off the rails. We were supposed to be off this 26 minutes.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's it for us. We're done. Thanks for checking in. Again, thanks for everybody in the chat. You guys are awesome. Thanks for keeping us rolling. I'm sorry I didn't get to every question. You know, obviously, we only typically go for about an hour. We're almost at an hour and a half here. So really appreciate all you guys and all your questions and insights and hot takes and heaters. If you guys enjoyed what you heard and saw here this evening, please smash that like button. Subscribe, tell your friends, you know, make sure you hit that little bell on the YouTubes for notice so that you can find out, you'll get the notification every time we're about to go live. We also find us here on Wednesday nights on the Purple app, which I am not allowed to talk about and tell you. If you know, you know. It screws up our YouTube algorithm, so we won't do that. But yeah, you can check us out here almost every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. Central. If you enjoy the content even more than just giving us a like or subscribe, know that anytime, including all of our other shows, anytime that we're live, super chats are available. You want to highlight a comment or, you know, just donate to the boys who are grinding it out, growing hemorrhoids and smoking cigarettes at the same time while we talk about White Sox baseball. We really appreciate that. You can find all of our episodes here on YouTube, past and present, as well as on our website. That would be futuresox.net. You can find all of our written content there as well. And for a very, very reasonable $2 a month donation to Patreon, you can get everything that's hidden behind the paywall, including all of our draft grades. We just did all of our pre-draft analysis and you guys check that stuff out. It's really cool. You can find all of our highlights throughout the system, all the minor league levels, and, of course, the major league club here on YouTube. But, yeah, we really appreciate all of you. We hope to see you all again next week when hopefully we're talking about maybe a trade or two and what kind of returns we got from them. But until next time, I am Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS on X/Twitter. This guy over here is Jacob Thome on X at JThome21. For Jacob, I'm Danny Miller. This has been Hot Takes and Haters. And until next time, go White Sox.
Looking to get the most out of your money, time, and even better, your points and miles? I'm Chris Hutchins. I'm a lifelong optimizer, and I've sold two companies, racked up millions of points, and traveled the world to over 60 countries almost always for free. And I host All the Hacks, an award-winning podcast trusted by more than a million listeners that turns big ideas into quick tactical moves you can start using today to upgrade your life, money, and travel. Recent episodes have covered how to book business class seats for economy prices, how to make an easy $3,000 a month from online deals, and tiny habits that you can use to buy back hours of your time each week. There's no fluff in the show. It's just proven playbooks to travel better, spend smarter, and design a life you're excited about. So search All the Hacks, that's All the Hacks, in your podcast app, hit follow, and start upgrading your life today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.